Greetings, Wargamers. We're your hosts, Trevor,
Jay,
Josh,
and this is
Shannon Attack.
Is sponsored by Discount Games Incorporated. Discount Games Incorporated offers the maximum discount on Privateer Press products. When you order $30 or more, you'll receive free or reduced shipping. You can find the web store at www.discountgamesinc.com. Chain Attack, the War Machine and Hordes podcast. I'm your host, Trevor, and I play Crucible Guard. Really just Festron Gearheart, though.
Why don't you love the rest of your faction, Trevor?
Because I suck with them.
Yeah, I saw a meme that says lock with precision strike is the answer to Clockatry.
Get on that.
That's not the meme I saw. It looked like he was attempting to kill a tank with a handgun.
Yeah, but I thought the joke was that then the tank blows up or something.
The tank blows up in the movie because an airplane flies over and destroys it, not because he shoots it with the handgun. So if that's their point in the meme, they failed horribly.
That's a bad meme.
I'm Jay, and it's everything's just a mad world to me right now. Life, etc.
Fair enough. I'm Josh, and I still love the fish fry list. I love me some minions.
Excellent. So let's go ahead and just jump in to community builders, Josh.
Let's do that. All right. This week's Community Builders post is on sportsmanship. Official nominations for people who exemplify sportsmanship in all aspects of play can be posted here. Nominations should include a name and description of an act of sportsmanship that you observed. So today's award is the nomination was made by one Andrew Barney, and he is nominating Tommy Hubble. That is a great name. Andrew says, our local group runs 1 to 3 journeyman leagues per year. And Tommy Hubble would continue to win best sportsman time after time if he didn't take himself out of the running after the first two. I get maybe that's even like bonus sportsmanship. Tommy's always fair, considerate, and fun opponent, and I've never seen him tilt or throw salt around after even the most punishing of defeats. On games that he wins, he never gloats, but instead shoots the breeze about that cool thing his opponent did during the game. And he says he's always supportive of any event our group puts on and is always willing to loan models to other players who are starting out in the game or testing lists before buying into them. So that is a great nomination, Andrew. I think a great example of sportsmanship in several different veins. And again, we want to congratulate Tommy Hubble. Tell him what he's won, Jay.
So I said last week that it was going to be $50 MSRP, but
I'm glad you remember.
It was wrong because I forgot that we had before skipped. I thought that the week we skipped, we actually did something.
Oh, okay.
And so that was right, a battle box. And this time is $50 MSRP. So what was the name again?
Tommy Hubble, distant cousin to the telescope.
Excellent.
He could be related to telescope.
He absolutely could be, yes.
Yeah.
I've heard Stranger Things.
Well, I haven't even watched Stranger Things.
And what's our... You, what?
You're
not season 3, I mean.
You've been kicked off the podcast. I don't care. You've been kicked off the podcast. You're no longer welcome here.
I'm waiting for my wife. It's not my fault.
All right.
We'll accept that. Well, it kind of is. Because
of choices I made decades ago?
No, because you should realize that...
That I could just watch it and
you
then
need to watch
like
it,
I've seen it for the first
and
time
then
when I
watch it again
anyway.
With your wife, because
you're right.
The day that you're going to watch it with your wife is never actually going to happen.
It happened with seasons 1 and 2.
Uh-huh. I mean, am I wrong that season 3 is not going to happen?
You're probably not wrong.
I mean, I watched...
It'll happen, because season 4 just announced yesterday.
As soon as I finish some Breaking Bad, then I'll get over to it.
I'm surprised you're still going.
I'm on season 4. I'm deep into season 4.
Holy cow, you're a long ways.
And for the record, I don't know how you ever are not on Team Skylar.
Oh.
She's like Fatim Eve, as far as I'm concerned.
Oh, you have some waking up to do. Your time will come.
Maybe someday we should do a bojo of shows Josh probably shouldn't have watched, but he did anyway.
That sounds amazing. How do I buy that one? Speaking of buying.
Yes. Oh, nice.
Everyone should buy the Oblivion series, which you can find a link to at the top of chainattack.com. You should go purchase it and enjoy it and hear Josh's fan fluff. It's worth the purchase price just for that.
I mean, I've enjoyed my purchase for that reason. But come on, Jay's outro music is also amazing too.
All right. So let's talk about things coming out going on with Discount Games Inc. and Muzon Minis. So Muzon Minis, by the time this is live, the Circle Ouroboros zones will be beautiful and available to purchase. So you should do so. That joins our other really awesome ones like Infernal, Signar, etc., etc. So there's Nigel's done some really cool designs, and check them out. From Discount Games Inc., we had a bit of a delay with orders because of some missing Riot Quest models that last week Privateer Press didn't do any shipping at all. And so that pushed things back a week. But you can get at some point, you'll be able to get... Well, by the time this is live, we'll probably be sold out of Archons.
Dang it!
But we should hopefully soon have restocks of the Morrow and the Midnight, the Primal Archon, etc. So those are pretty exciting. Let's talk about a Dank Doom meme.
Let's be dank, Jay.
Okay.
Do you have a surprise one today, out of curiosity?
I had one that was, I can't remember what it was. It made me laugh, but actually I remember what it was. So it was, you know, the picture of the replicant in Blade Runner.
Uh-huh.
He was basically like, I can't remember what the caption was, but he had glowing blue eyes, like he'd been taking spice.
Something about the spice, right? I think I just passed it.
Yeah, he's like, where's my fucking spice or something? Yes, I don't know. But
exactly what it was. Yeah. All right, that is not the one I had.
Okay, good.
The one I had is more, I think it's more Jay-friendly.
Oh, excellent. It has cats?
One character, yes. A cat is labeled Paul. And I honestly had never looked at it. Like, you know, the thumbnail doesn't really show everything always. So the cat is labeled Paul, and he has his paw in one of those little alligator chompy toys. And the chompy toy is labeled Pain Box. I'm showing it to Jay for his reaction.
That's amazing.
The cat's face is so good.
What is in the box?
What is in the box? Yes, that is your Dank Doom meme.
What do you think of that? And that's basically the opening scene of the book, isn't it?
Very close. Yes. Yeah.
What do you think of that? It feels like it does a pretty good job setting the tone for the entire book.
I think it does. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, honestly, that's the scene that like made me fall in love with Doom in the series. Yeah.
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah, because that's where he says the mantra.
Yeah, that's where he starts saying.
I understand, but
and that was like. That was my mantra through, well, what year is it?
Through now.
How many bad decisions have you made in your life because you started chanting, like, fear's the mind killer?
You're right. Oh, my lands. Let's not catalog them right now. I must not fear, Trevor.
Okay.
All right. Well, is officially the WTC... is finished. We have exciting results. We have congratulations to Norway. They ended up winning the event. They went through two Polish teams, and I believe in the final round they had a 4-1 victory. So fantastic job by the Finns. And what would you guys like to talk about first in this exciting WTC world?
Well, is this really a question of how long I make you wait until you
I don't know what you're talking about.
I'm curious to talk about the circle results first.
Let's do that. So sure. So we had a preview episode where we had Norbert on as a guest from the UK, and we made some wagers. Or predictions.
Wait, I don't remember.
We did make predictions. And Norbert and Trevor said that they expected Circle to be at 60%. And I said that I was expecting it to be lower, to be in 55, which I considered within the acceptable deviation range. ended up being at like 51.8. Is that correct? 52?
Somewhere close to there, yeah.
I was trying to find the dumb results. Like
I have it right here. Okay, 51.
I did all the important preparation for the episode.
51.19. So Circle was the most played faction. Mirror matches are removed from this data set. Circle had 129 wins and 123 losses.
Yeah, so that's just over 50.
Yep, 51.19, okay. As it were.
Nice, wow. It's almost like you can remember things.
No, it's almost like I'm looking at the graphic now. So, what are our thoughts on this?
So, one of the interesting things that I thought, that I was not at the event, so I have no clue what happened, but one of the things that I found interesting was Tom Guan's analysis of Circle.
Okay.
And that he felt like Circle was oversaturated and that people were taking less, that on some of the teams where they had multiple players playing Circle, mm-hmm. that they were basically doing themselves a disservice because the second person was having to take less
Optimized builds.
Yeah, less optimized builds, and they were getting put into less favorable matchups because of it. Is that true? I don't know, but it certainly sounds reasonable. So, you know, I think that there's certainly, and the second part, I should save until Jay tries to attack me.
Whoa.
But
it's not an attack if it's fucking true.
One of the problems that a lot of the Circle players ran into was that Devourer's Host was a common played theme, and one of the common predators of that theme is All Too Exalted.
Oh, okay. Interesting.
And so there was if you look at these All Too Exalted win percentages, it was especially inflated, and I feel like that there's a big portion of that where the two combinations are hitting each other.
Inflated's an interesting word.
If you look at Zal 2 win percentages normal tournaments, it is nowhere near what it was at the WTC. In fact, his win percentage at the WT was 70%, which isn't even close to what it is at normal tournaments.
I believe that he had 71 games with a 66% win percentage.
At the WTC?
At the WTC.
Okay.
The stat I saw was 70%.
That could be. I don't know. Granted, most of these are like the equivalent of math on the back of your napkin.
Yeah, there's a lot of people that weren't very careful with their counting. So, there's a couple of them I saw, and when I saw the numbers, I was like, that is clearly wrong, because I know for a fact that doesn't work, that doesn't add up. But regardless, 66, 70 doesn't matter. That's way higher than any Zal 2 percentages I've seen out of other tournaments.
Yeah, I should ask, where are you looking at?
Yeah, it's way higher.
Where are you seeing?
Zal 2 actually is generally right at near 50% in all the results I've seen.
Anyway, and so you are suggesting that there was enough of him as a natural predator to devour.
I'm not suggesting anything. I'm just stating the facts as I've seen them. And I can throw in some other things or whatever conjecture, but I do think that you should consider that.
I'm trying to scroll real fast to get to the actual lists that we have, because I think it's interesting to look at the Circle lists that the winning team, they had a Circle player, mm-hmm. unsurprisingly.
Yeah.
And the lists that he played, some of them were quite interesting.
Because they were different than the average? Or?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. So I have the lists here. I just have to pull up his lists. I think this is it here. One of the things that was interesting with it is that one of his lists is a pretty interesting Una 2 build.
It's been a while since we've seen her.
Yeah. One of the things I'm struggling with is that the conflict chamber names, I think, are different than
than what they were at the event.
Than what it is on the WTC results leaderboard or whatever. Okay. So, continue on talking about Circle and other things of interest, and I'll have some more information shortly.
Okay.
What was the off list to Devourer's Host usually?
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Sorry. I've been part of what's is the issue is that me being a dumb American. And the thing that's funny about this is that I actually do know like where in Scandinavia, like Sweden, Norway, and Finland are.
Right.
But I've been saying that the Finns won the event.
So that's where you're looking instead of the Norwegians?
And that's not correct.
That is not correct.
It's Norway that won the event. Another thing that was a little bit difficult with this was that I wanted to try to friend some of the winning team on Facebook. Mm-hmm. And they just have first names. So I believe I'm just wildly off base about the circle thing. Here are the lists that they had. So, and I don't think I'm even going to try to say your name. I'll say...
Just spell it, Jay.
So, coming out this week as well, there's a episode of... Actually, it'll already be out. Of me talking with some of the players from Finland. Norway. These Scandinavian countries. Norway. I'm so sorry.
This is amazing.
Norway, where I talk with them, and the one that I know for sure I'm going to be talking with is their Retribution player, who his first name is Sver, something like that. And so he's got Gareth 2 and Assyria 1. And then they have another player, Martin. He has Legion, Ravens of War with Absalonia 2, and Primal Terrors, Kallus 1. There is Kuba with Krios 1, Creator's Might, and the Harbinger, Faithful Masses. And then there is Juan with Dark Menagerie, Dreamer, and the Child, Dark Menagerie. And then finally there's Christian, Cyrenia, Faithful Masses, and Vlad 3, Warriors of the Old Faith.
That's some frightening shit right there.
Mm-hmm.
That's double man off.
No circle at all.
Right.
And double men off.
It is kind of interesting. I'm assuming that most of the... So usually when you're making your plans for the WTC, one of the things that you want to have is at least if... So going into it, you're probably thinking, okay, I'm expecting to see a lot of circle. And so you need to have 3 to 5, probably at least 4 players who are like, okay, I feel good going into circle.
Right.
And so it's kind of interesting. It can make for interesting matchups on the list builds that people have, if you're like, okay, I'm not, our team doesn't have any circle, or the equivalent in Mark II would have been kind of like, we don't have a Crix list and everyone is bringing Crix answers.
Yeah.
Granted, in Mark II, it feels like Crix was a bigger outlier than than some of the other.
Yeah. I mean, we're
and talking. So you were kind of handicapping yourself if you weren't taking a Crix.
Yeah. I mean, the percentages we're seeing here, if you discount the two outliers, which is just very few players with Infernals and Minions, yeah, the percentages we're talking about here are pretty tight. I mean, 39% of trolls, is that the win percentage of trolls was 39%? I can't remember.
Tell you 1 second here.
I remember it being that was...
Yeah, 39.62.
Yeah, and then the high is scoring at 58%.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, I mean, that comparatively to years past is way closer than it's ever been before.
Right. And the Infernals numbers is 66%. I think another thing that's interesting with that as well is that I'm pretty sure that that doesn't include any Hearts of Darkness lists and that those got...
Oh, they got put with the other with Kador or whatever they were with. Yeah,
Sloan is with Signar or
that's gonna make difficult. It really hard to keep track of stats going forward.
Yeah. Right. Yeah.
We see what you're doing, Privateer Press.
But what do you think of? I guess first off, what do you think of Double Menoth?
Scares the hell out of me.
Yeah. Well, and part of it too is that it's interesting how regional metas or local metas, national metas, etc. Like, we don't really have too many people that are playing Menoth right now
in our area,
our local area.
Yeah.
And so I would feel a lot like I was a lamb going to the slaughter.
Super underprepared.
I'm certain of what I'm going to see. Yeah. I mean, I'm sure that the other countries didn't feel that way.
Right.
But,
yeah.
But
yeah.
I doubt there was very many of them that were like, yeah, we have double protection for Menoth.
Right.
Certainly there was double protection for Circle, for Scorn, for, some of the other things out there. There may have been some teams that had double protection for Menoth, but it's when you get to two problem matchups that are the same faction, it starts getting really hard to make the pairing process work favorably for you.
These guys look problematic in different ways.
Yeah, I mean, I want to talk about this, another list that Martin is playing. He's the Legion player. His Ravens of War list. I love this. This is amazing.
I think I've played this, or a similar list. It is hateful.
I don't think that I've seen this in...
Oh, never mind. I'm thinking of the Primal Terrors list. I've played into lists like his Primal Terrors. Sure. It was mean, and I didn't.
Everyone's played into...
Yeah.
into that.
So lay the Ravens of War on us.
Okay, this is cool.
Oh, it's Golabi.
So
that's cool.
Ravens of War with Absalonia. You have Golab. You then have 6 free Harriers.
Are those like 2 per requisition point or something? Is that how
Yeah.
Okay.
A Nerif, Proteus, a Seraph, and then five Shredders. The Hermit of Henchhold, a Forsaken, and 2 Hellmouths.
You had me at Proteus, really.
Like, one of the things I like about this is, like, who the fuck was preparing for 12 lesser Legion, 11 lesser Legion Warbies? No one.
I'm sorry, I don't even know what that list does.
Right? Like, your opponent sits down across from you and you're like,
I need to
what the fuck is going on here?
Yeah, you're like, I'm not sure if I'm going into List Chicken or not. Should I be afraid of that, or should I not be afraid of that?
Yeah, it's coming to the pairing process, and people are like, you know, okay, who wants to play against Legion? Well, I don't fucking know.
Truthfully, there's a lot of that should be going on right now, and probably isn't.
Yes,
because how many lists?
I think a lot of players at the WTC ended up taking safe lists that they knew were strong, but that everyone else was practice versus.
Right. Yeah, and right. I'm not just pointing at the WTC. I'm pointing at everybody.
Right. Yeah.
The entire community right now is in this funk where we're playing things.
I'm bringing the fish fry.
That are similar. I think the fish fry is a great example of a list that may or may not be really good, but we don't know because we just haven't seen it. The truth is that I think we all should take a step back and go, what have I not explored in my own faction that might be different now that the everything's turned up? And it feels like this is a broken record. We've been saying this every 6 months, every time a new CID comes through or whatever, but it just doesn't feel like... It feels like a lot of the communities get stuck in the same rut. And even post-Oblivion, it feels like a lot of lists look...
Haven't moved enough.
Right. And one thing that I think is interesting is that I feel like I can go through almost every player on this team and find something I think is noteworthy or unusual or out of the norm.
Yeah.
So, for example, Sver, the Retribution player.
Right.
He is playing Gareth 2, and he only has 1 Dawnguard Trident in the list. His other list is Assyria. It does have 2 Dawnguard Tridents. Mm-hmm. And he does have an Arcantric Force generator with Gareth. But, you know, that's something that's unusual.
Right.
Next one, let's talk about Cuba. I don't know.
We're sorry. They probably won't listen to us anyway.
Yeah, I hope not. I'll feel bad. One of his lists is Krios 1.
Yeah.
Which...
It's a throwback.
A throwback, which many people have...
Certainly not played against recently.
Yeah.
Holy cow. And with Sevi 0 with 2 Redeemers, it seems rude.
Then the Harbinger is playing with a casual 3 Crusaders and a Sanctifier.
Mm-hmm.
Like...
Yeah, that's not the normal build either.
That is not a normal build.
It is a popular style right now, but that one's different than all the others you've seen.
But I noticed that the rest of his Harbinger list is all the stuff you wish she could never.
Yeah, it's there's very similar lists out there, but his is obviously a different take
battle
on
group,
it.
Right?
Yeah.
Then Juan, his Dreamer Dark Menagerie list is fairly standard, but the child is pretty. Out of the norm currently.
Really?
Yeah.
Okay.
And it's not like, oh my God, shocking, but honestly, if you look at almost all of the Grimkin casters right now, it's probably the one I would least expect to see in a pairing. Mm-hmm. I mean, maybe I'm wrong on that, but like Tom played the Wanderer. There's been a bump renaissance. The King is obviously seen play with Clocatrices. You know, some of the other casters who were previously the basement dwellers are kind of seeing a resurgence. So I think that's interesting. And then finally, the
Christian.
Yeah, Christian. Two protectorate lists. And I think it's interesting that the Cyrenia list, previously when we had seen Cyrenia, a lot of times what you had seen was 2 huge bases.
Mm-hmm.
Both with armor buffs and then using the rock wall to protect your
landing zones.
Your landing zones. And this is, you know, completely different. Cyrenia with 2 Dervishes, a Sanctifier, a Hierophant, the Avatar. When's the last time you saw that?
Qua.
to
long time ago.
Allegiance of the Order of the Fist, to Champions of the Order of the Wall, A Hand of Silence, two Menite Archons, the Covenant of Menoth, Arrak, the Choir of Menoth, three Initiates of the Wall. So it's, again, something where, granted, most of Menoth would be this way for me right now. But if I sat down against this, the odds that I will have reps versus this build are pretty low.
Right.
The same in a lot of ways for Vlad III and Warriors of the Old Faith.
Right.
So,
like, does our local even know what Warriors of the Old Faith is?
I mean,
we have to have a Menoth player that actually...
Don't think so, no.
...played Kador as well to be able to put together.
Right, yeah.
I mean, that's just...
To me, the scariest thing about that list is that he's using Yuri the Axe. Because to me, that means, like, this guy knows something. He's seen some stuff. You know what I'm saying?
Okay.
But yeah, again, that's what's interesting. That's how you can have the two protectorate, is they it feels like they took those diverse takes.
Well, I mean, that's an opportunity that's I think is strong and allows you to really build varied lists within the same faction. Yeah. So
now, remind me, you guys, who was their final against? It was a Poland.
It's Poland, yeah.
But was it West, South, or Centrum?
I'll be honest, I don't know.
I'm pretty sure it was Centrum in the finals. But they had to go through two Polish teams during the tournament.
During the course of the whole tournament, sure.
Yeah.
All right, so should we go to the other end of the spectrum and talk about trolls for a moment?
Sure.
So we spent some time talking about what dictates needing a little more
love.
Attention
from mom and dad.
Attention. I was talking about the other end on the top. We've talked about, you know, what percentage is too high.
Right.
But
right.
We rarely talk about what percentage is too low. And I think, you know, the community is very quick, and I hate this. I hate that they do this, but they're very quick to say, it's a team event, you should ignore those low results, and they like to make excuses and stuff. But in modern War Machine is 39% with the number of games, which... truthfully, it's not as many as maybe it could have been for trolls, so it's a little hard to say this. But is 39% worrisome?
Well, it's obviously worrisome.
Yeah, I thought it was already worrisome that they only had 9.
Okay.
Right? Like, was there only 9 troll players or 9 troll... Yeah, 9 troll players,
well, I mean, let's divide the total games by 6, and you'll have the number of players.
Right.
Yeah.
Trolls had 54 games, so there were 9 players, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay.
I mean, that's hard to go off of, and that's an excuse that'll be used by the naysayers. So here's, there's only 9 players, but 54 games seems like enough to me to at least start drawing some initial conclusions.
Yeah, but I guess here's my, like, I'm probably going to be doing this a fair bit this episode, I don't know.
Okay.
But, like, even later on this episode, we're going to have a discussion about Scorn, and, like, I'm actually not that strident about what should actually happen to Scorn.
Okay.
And I don't feel that's right necessarily about what should happen with trolls either. Somewhat in that I think one of the biggest issues for trolls is that certainly there is a perception that they have a problem, and that's almost as bad as,
right?
Like, it almost feeds
self-fulfilling prophecy.
Correct. Right? Yeah. So if everyone is like, oh, well, trolls aren't very good, why would you play trolls, etc., then you're not going to get list innovation. You're not going to get good players who are coming to your faction and trying to make things work.
Let me throw something else out there. And it's a topic we discussed on this show, and I'm going to relate it to this particular idea. So one of the factions that did well was Scorn. One of the factions that did poorly is Trolls. The Steamroller 2019 scenarios require you to spread out. Scorn has battle engines that easily can spread out and take part on the edge of the board without any involvement from their caster. Trolls do not. How much of that do you feel like is actually a factor in what we're seeing?
I think it's a big factor.
Okay.
The beer wagon can't spread out?
It's more the beer wagon support, is not right? Really good.
Yeah.
I mean, that's the issue.
Don't
is that
they
we
also
haven't.
Have the gun carriage thing or whatever?
Not good.
It wouldn't hold its own on its own.
In comparison, we're not even in the same discussion.
Yeah.
I mean, truthfully, those models are okay, but they really need to be in the center of the force where they can receive benefits of the rest of.
Yeah.
I mean, trolls across the board, that's their problem, is that they traditionally, and I'm going to play into what Jay already said, traditionally, the lack of list innovation has required trolls to be, You know, and I'm not trying to offend anybody listening that's going to yell and scream. I've tried everything, because maybe you haven't. I don't know. But what I'm seeing on the table feels like it's very samey.
Well, part of Bricky, part of the
yeah.
Like we talked, I think in a dojo about a Grim One list that Julian played, and I like that list.
Did have the beer wagon. Right?
I like that list quite a bit.
Yeah, and it can spread out better than most troll lists.
Yeah, but so I do think that there's things that are good, that are interesting, etc. But like just in general, it feels like it's a lot easier if you have a lot of people excited for your faction, thinking outside the box for your faction, try to do, you know, new things or whatever.
And absolutely, is anytime you have that many people playing stuff, somebody's going to stumble upon something really good.
Let's be honest here for a second. You know, how much of Grimkin's success is because Patrick Dunford likes that faction and he's developed some great lists and some great tactics with that faction? And
it's definitely a contributing
factor. It's a contributing factor. Now, I do think that Grimkin have better models right now than trolls do as well. And I think that there's a reason why Pat's been drawn to Grimkin.
Sure. And the very few people are drawn to trolls.
You know, is it a chicken or egg thing? Both? I don't know. Yeah. But
anyway, so of the things that I saw, the most concerning to me was the 39% from trolls.
Yeah.
I didn't see a caster breakdown for trolls, so I don't know if there was casters that were a shining light amongst the darkness, or...
I mean, Kolgrima, there were 7 Kolgrimas. Oh, do you mean in the results?
The results. I was wondering. I know the caster breakdown, but I didn't know the percentages of what they won.
How the casters themselves.
Right, how they performed. Because, you know, that can be fairly telling as well. So, anyway. I would like to see trolls get something that allows them to spread out. And I think that every faction in some way or another should have the ability to build a style of list that sort of bricky and build a style list that sort of spreads out. And I feel like most of the factions can do that, you know, but it feels like trolls is one of the few that they just can't do that. I don't know that they can do it well.
I mean, you mentioned the battle engines that trolls have, and you know, I was playing trolls. Or maybe I was playing Kador. I was maybe playing both, but I was pretty dissatisfied actually with both the gun carriage and the.
Yeah, they're pretty uninspiring most of the time.
Right, and
with their lack of options, it feels like they do the kind of the samey thing all the time.
And at the time they talked about, like, you know, these are the different roles that the battle engines can have, and I was like, oh well, the role that you're giving the troll battle engine and the Kator battle engine just kind of sucks.
It's an unnecessary role. It's the shelf role.
Yeah. So, you know, I don't know.
Is that even the answer? Is the answer to improve their battle engines, or is it, you know, improve something else that can sit out on the edge? I mean, you know, truthfully, they have units that feel like they could be out on the edge, but are the less taken ones.
Well, they have probably the best ambushing unit in the game.
Trolls do, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, the bears.
Yeah.
And I have no problem with that. I think that, you know, they're great, but they can only do so much.
Yeah.
And it feels like they work better in twos, and you need to have them on the same side. And in this particular similar version, you need to be able to cover both sides.
But can't you cover one side with your main force? And
I mean, the bears eventually need somebody to come take over, because they can't hold it for forever. I guess that was my point.
Yeah. I don't know. Just to reiterate, or to be clear, like, I don't feel like
a major overhaul.
I don't feel like this is. I'm not trying to blame the troll players here.
Oh, right, sure.
So I think that there were good players who played trolls that went to the event, and I do think that it was more their tools that were kind of the issue than the players themselves.
Sure, sure.
So,
and truthfully, when you get down to 9 players, I don't know who showed up.
Sure,
You don't know their individual situations. It doesn't take more than 3, you know, 2 or 3 of them to end up in a...
Have a bad day
or have bad pairings or whatever it is. And it can skew those results significantly.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, especially on that lower end where you don't have very many players.
Right.
It's hard to do that when you've got 60 players playing Circle or whatever.
Right. So what area do we wish to discuss next?
I mean, I feel like I'm contractually obligated to ask if Minions needs anything.
More Minions players! That's what we need, baby!
I mean, obviously, they didn't draw in very many people. This has been one of their worst years for representation in a long time.
Right.
So, obviously, there's... I don't know what the general...
Do you have the results? How did Carver do?
I don't...
I just have the overall percentages. Oh,
okay. I don't know.
I have the, what the 3 and 9 for 25%.
Oh, see? Yeah. That, by your...
Three players.
By your measurements, that means we need some help, right?
I don't know. Is it, what's the general consensus in the Minions group?
That we love our faction.
You guys are so upbeat. I wish everyone was like you guys. I mean, it does feel like that there's something telling going on when you only have, what is that, two players?
There were
three.
Three total players.
Three total players. Okay. Why did they only have 12 games?
There were two players that were, one of those players is Disciples of Agony, isn't it? Or is that not the case? That wouldn't show.
I mean, if you're counting Disciples of Agony, then there's a whole bunch of Minions players.
Because I thought there were four. Well, I do.
12. Yeah, two players.
I count Disciples of Agony.
Okay, well then then Minions did great. Actually, Disciples didn't have that great of results.
Of a showing.
Yeah, overall. I mean, it was okay. It wasn't bad, but it wasn't as good as I think some people expected it to be.
All right, look.
Including me.
Have the Scorn conversation. I'm ready for it.
Okay.
Okay.
I want to hear it.
What would you like to discuss?
I want to hear Jay's accusations. Although, again, you're saying you're not strong. No, you're such an old man.
I know. The thing that maddens me about it, and maybe it's just because Scorn has been on the bottom for so long that they don't know how to react when they're the best faction in the game.
Do you honestly believe they're the best faction in the game?
They're easily top three, right?
Yeah. I mean...
Because I don't care what you say about the results. I still feel like Grimkin is top. Circle's two. Scorn would be three.
Well, of course you do. Because you're a Scorn player. No Scorn player believes that their faction is top.
I'm asking you. Do you believe they're top? Do you believe they're better than Circle? Do you believe they're better than
Grimkin? I think they're probably better than Circle at this point.
Okay.
So they're either first or second, in my opinion.
Huh.
That's a good way to dodge the question. First or second.
Okay.
Hot takes.
Hot takes, baby.
I have to
defend Grimkin.
Completely be in, like, yeah, like I play Grimkin. I have to defend, and like this is a bit on part of a podcast. Of course, I have to be like the on this hot take. Of course, Scorn is the.
Are you saying
list of them?
Are you saying I'm the equivalent of the WWE wheel or heel? I mean,
no. Well, like
I'm trying to get people to hate me.
Oh yeah, yeah. I'm Stephen A, and you're...
No, you don't. No, you don't.
Oh, dang it, I'm missing the reference.
Yeah, you're not... No. No, I will get up. I'll get
Triple H.
I will get the hell up, and I will walk out of here if you even remotely... This bullshit.
Oh, I love it so much.
Guys, I can't stand listening to him, even for 10 seconds.
Man, oh, all my wrestling takes are so old.
That's not wrestling. That's not.
This is ESPN. Oh, two hot take guys.
Thing. Okay,
well, not really newscasters.
Yeah, sportscasters. Sorry,
not really sportscasters.
They are hired specifically to say stupid shit on TV so that people will keep tuning in to see
sports
what
jesters.
Additional,
basically, though.
One more, way more than the other.
Yeah, I mean, it's basically sports talk radio with.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah.
I gotcha.
Anyway,
you're saying
I was saying like
clearly...
I'm not sure if you scoured the entire earth that you could find any Scorn player that thinks that they're the best faction in the game. And
whoa, there's a lot of people you won't find that are going to say that, including Grim. I mean, there's going to be a lot of people out there beyond Scorn who are going to say that Grimkin is still the best in the game.
There will be people who say that, yes, but
I would say the majority of people out there would say that.
All I'm saying is that of the factions that are in the, you know, the top echelon.
Sure.
Like, you'll find Grimkin players who are like, oh, yeah, Grimkin's probably the best. You'll find Circle players. Yeah, Circle's probably the best.
Okay.
You're not going to find fucking Scorn players who say that. None. They will defend it until they're fucking dead. Like, oh, no, we're fine. It's like, oh, there's, you know, we just had these amazing matchups or, you know, or.
I just like, want to know how the
like, my fucking brain was going to melt when someone said this to me, that the reason why Scorn, you know, isn't the best faction in the game is because they have some bad matchups. And the best faction in the game...
I wouldn't even say that.
And I'm like, have,
Everybody
has playing this
matchups.
Fucking game.
Yeah, everybody has bad matchups. That's not an excuse.
I just want to know how well the list with all the Archidon.
We don't have individual results, so I don't know.
Well, other than Zal 2 was fucking ridiculous.
Right. With its win percentage.
Yes.
I mean, truthfully, if you take out Zal 2, then they look fairly average. I mean, he did bring them up quite a bit.
Interesting.
Which is kind of funny that I can't remember who. There have been a lot of, like, for example, I just did a meta episode with Potsy, where he was like, Zal 2, Exalted, very mad.
Just that the Exalted was particularly tooled to deal with?
Or maybe it's just like, maybe it's just that they're fucking good.
Play it. Well, like you should play it, because
they're the predator of Devourer's Host. But what I was also curious about is, like, I think don't they have a lot of good tools against, like, the Dreamer, the Grimkin list that you would be dealing with? I mean,
yeah, somewhat.
They're not going to care about Gremlin Swarms, are they?
They have some issues that come up with Dreamer that don't necessarily come with Devourer's Host, and that's armor values. But I think overall, you're right. It does match up fairly well against some of those, and that's a really strong thing. When you have the list that matches up well against
the Boogeyman,
yeah, that all of a sudden, then that's really good. Overall, honestly, Zal 2, when you're not fighting its silver bullet targets,
yeah,
it's pretty mediocre. It's pretty good against those, though.
Really,
those are important.
My basic point is that, like, if someone came to me and was like, do you think that Scorn must be nerfed? I'm like, but if...
I will stand on the hill that I started last time.
Scorn players drive me fucking crazy. So that's my point.
I will stand on the hill that I said before, and I still agree with it, that if something is over 55%, it probably should be looked at. And I'm saying that with this as well. Does it need to be changed? I don't know, and I don't think so. But certainly, if I were a game designer and I saw these results, I would look at things below 45%. I would look at things above 55%. And I would say, is this a valid statistic?
Mm-hmm.
And the first thing you have to do is say, well, you know, you'd have to analyze it even more than what we have available to us, because you'd have to start looking at individual matchups and say, you know, what did Zal 2 get played into, and how many people did he beat, and which were the common things that he beat, and is that a problem?
Right.
So in my... in my Twitter feed, I got in a long back and forth about it on this topic. And just recently, one Dr. Sasha Kellerman had a reply. And I would be curious to hear your take on what he said, because I thought he said it fairly well. He said, I found that Scorn has boatloads of fantastic matchups, very little stuff they need to dodge, and are harder to tech for than any other top faction, because they have four or five archetypes that kick you in the nuts from really different angles. Upon thinking about it a little bit longer, I don't even think Scorn has significantly better matchups against Circle Grimkin than they do against some other random faction. Really depends on what list they have.
Okay. I mean, you're asking me off the cuff to answer a thing that he's thought about for a while, but
it
doesn't feel that way. I do agree with his statement that that Scorn is able to put together multiple archetypes, which can be problematic for opponents.
Yeah. Right. As a matter of fact, I want to ask a question. Like, does Disciples of Agony, did it add an archetype to Scorn's quiver?
No, I don't think so.
Really?
Yeah, I don't think so.
Did it make one particular archetype a lot stronger then?
Because
can freaking dial, you can tune those beasts up like, holy mama jama.
I'm probably looking through Mark II glasses, but it feels like that's an archetype that Scorn has had in the past.
That's what I mean. I'm just saying it feels like it got pretty tuned up by...
No, I wouldn't say tuned up. Access. I would say brought back if you had to nail me down.
Sure. Okay.
But it does feel like some of that stuff you could do before, but certainly it's helped it to the point where, yeah, maybe it is something you got to worry about. The part that I disagree with his sentence is the part where he says that he doesn't feel like Scorn has a better matchup against the Grimkin /circle matchup than some of the others. Cause I actually don't, I think that they do. I think they are better.
You do think Scorn is currently the best answer to those two boogeymen.
I don't know if they're the best. I don't want to stand on that.
Right.
But I will say that I think they're better.
They have good answers.
They have better than a lot of factions do.
Yeah. You're right.
Yeah.
So, you know, I don't know, but I think that certainly there are some stats you could look at throughout all of these and go, okay, well, this might need to be looked at. I think that honestly, some of the factions, there's a lot of this that I feel like is hinges on Steam Lore 2019. I feel like the factions that did better, a lot of them are more capable to handle the spread out nature of Steam Lore 2019, at least some of the time. I mean, you can have a faction that is strong and also can handle that. And that doesn't matter most of the time. It's only going to matter, you know, a few times. But over the course of a big event with this many games played, it will raise a faction's
that
win percentage by 2 or 3%, I think. Sure. You know, that's
well,
not a large
number.
After,
but... So if we ignore Infernals, because obviously
the
play sample is so small, you have Scorn at 58%. And then there's basically a 5%, 5.5% drop to the next faction. And within that, there's... so you have Rhett, Krix, Menoth, Grimkin, Circle, Legion that are all from 53 to 50%.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it's a little bit difficult to say necessarily what is, you know, why is Krix, you know, for example, the third highest win percentage?
Yeah, without looking at it, who knows? I do know. I think a lot of people probably looked at it and went, what?
I do know that Scar 1 did very well.
That's because she's still fucking
amazing. And I also know that there was a Ghost Fleet player who played Scar 3
amazing.
And just had I'm not sure if he went 5-1 or 5-0 with Scar 3 Ghost Fleet.
Just raffle stumped, really.
Yeah. I mean, it's one of those things where things are cyclical, and it feels like Zal was the same way, that right. He came out, was really strong, and then he went down, and it feels like the Zal 2 result was sort of surprising to me, because I actually didn't expect to see that much of him, and it's like he's coming back around, and Scar is definitely like, hi, I'm back! Never yeah. really left, you guys just kind of forgot about me, and everyone's like, ah, shit, I did not prepare for that.
This has basically been the...
I'm just waiting for Haley 3 to do that to people.
Oh, God. Yeah.
You had a Haley 3 list suggestion the other day that I want to see. I can't remember what it was.
That was with the Morrowind Archon.
That's yeah. right. That's
there's
right.
certainly some of these things that you know, never really got bad, per se. They just sort of disappeared for a while, yeah, and it's about time for them to come back. And again, maybe that's bad because we were just ragging on people earlier in the show for not, you know, innovating. But
right.
truthfully, that's the best part about, you know, Mark III right now, is that you can bring something back and it can still be strong, or you can innovate something completely new. And I think that it has a really good chance of doing well.
Still being competitive, right.
I do think it's somewhat interesting that Rhett basically had the second highest win percentage, and
just below Scorn.
Well, 5.5% that below Scorn.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Okay.
But they were top of the like that band of factions after that.
Mm-hmm.
By some of it's just by like 0.5% or whatever.
Yeah,
so
right,
you know,
right.
whatever. But I do think it's interesting that for a lot of the Rhett players, like now is basically the season of their discontent. And
yeah,
I mean we're a lot. A lot of that's the Trident, right? Am I wrong?
Well, no,
Scorn,
a lot of...
Scorn players annoy you, Rhett players annoy me.
Yeah, but that's been the birth of the faction.
Yeah.
Before there even were Rhett players.
There is definitely a part of me that wishes I had, like, a full-painted Scorn faction.
Oh, I thought you were going to say that wishes you were a Minions player, so you can
oh, God, no.
feel joy. So you just always feel
so
joy.
So I could have joy. I'm not sure how I would react to that.
Might be allergic.
Yeah. Like kids.
What's happening with my heart right now?
No, I honestly, I think the most common response from Rhett players as to why they're unhappy is because they feel like they have a very narrow segment of lists that are successful, and that some of the other theme lists that they were interested in that weren't their strongest theme lists got nerfs.
Oh.
And so they're like...
So they really feel like they can't compete with other stuff outside
right.
that narrow band. Oh, that's interesting.
I've got my teeth kicked in by several things that are not in that narrow band. So I'm having a hard time, like...
Well, we're not asking you to muster sympathy.
Oh, okay.
Let's talk about the other faction that was... I'll say two factions that were a fairly big surprise for me.
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. So trolls... So... This is like a minor statistical difference, but because we're humans that are conditioned on having 10 fingers and 10 toes, it seems significant. But the trolls were at 39.62% win rate. Crucible Guard was at 40.74% win rate.
Mm-hmm. So you're and surprised it was that low, you mean?
I am surprised that Crucible Guard is that low. And if it had been like, you know, 0.8%... worse, so that they were like 39.9 loss rate, it would have felt that much worse. But the other one that surprised me is Mercs.
I was wondering if you're
at 41.82.
Yeah, I mean, when we first saw these stats, I think I said, though, the two that surprised me the most were Crucible Guard and Mercs, because not as much Crucible Guard, and I'm not going to say whether, I don't necessarily understand why they got so poorly. It was just surprising to me. But Mercs is one of the, I feel like, is one of the powerhouses in the game. Like, I look at some of the shit that they can put on the table, and it scares the hell out of me.
Right.
And I just, it doesn't seem to, what I experience playing against them, or what I see in on paper, does not translate into what into we're that seeing statistic. There.
The thing about Mercs is it always feels to me like they can, I'm going to call it dark horsing, but it just feels like they can have options that you just don't even know how to get reps against. Like,
it is hard to get reps against it, right? Yes, because like, all the Merc players, they have their little, their favorite casters they play that are completely right. different than all the other Merc casters play. It feels
it's
like.
Also kind of interesting. They've had a wave of new releases right. that a lot of people probably haven't had practice versus, and they're getting another wave of new releases here shortly.
I mean, how much could that have possibly affected this, the win rate that, by the same token, the Mercs players haven't had enough practice with some of those new releases?
I know there were, I know of several players who hopped onto Mercs late and, you know, decided that they were, that was going to be what they were going to play for the WTC. And I do somewhat wonder if that was a factor in the results.
I mean, yeah, so do you think that potentially that's a little bit of an aberration with Mercs? Maybe. I mean, I obviously we're making guesses here. We don't really know, but
so
it does is, feel it like is, a little no, bit of an
like
aberration.
It is
to me.
It is very interesting to me. So like again, there's like a very basically especially when we're looking at like how many players were playing Trollbloods, etc., there's basically no statistical difference between the results of Trolls and Mercs.
Uh-huh.
It's basically they did basically exactly the same. And on the one hand, I think that Trolls got some issues and I think Mercs are great. So
okay, well then let's focus in on Crucible Guard for a moment. Do you feel like if you had to make a guess as to an explanation as to why they did poorly, what would you think it would be?
I have kind of a hard,
I can't imagine people have teched against them that much.
You wouldn't think so.
No, you wouldn't think so.
I know I would, because I hate that person so much.
I don't know. It's kind of hard for me to do a good analysis of Crucible Guard.
Okay.
Because there's definitely been times where, like, I've played them, and, like, they seem fine, but they seem like they're missing something to me.
Okay.
And then,
but you can't put your finger on what it is.
And then
missing.
And some of it is the actually my top conclusion with it so far has been that they're just not a playstyle that I enjoy as much as some other factions, and maybe they're not the faction for me.
Okay,
and that could very easily be it in my case.
So I don't know what to make of this either. I will say that at what I feel like was Scorn's low point, there were many times where I went to tournaments and I felt like there was nothing I could do to win. Like that no matter what I brought, the chances of me winning were infinitesimal.
Okay.
That I was being no matter what I did, that there just wasn't a great option for me to put on the table. And maybe I could have won the event if I'd brought different lists that day, but a lot of times it depended on, you know, did I bring the correct lists for the field? And, you know, that's guesswork sometimes.
Right.
I will say that I haven't played a lot of tournaments with Crucible Guard, but every time I've come to a tournament with Crucible Guard, I've never felt that way.
Right, yeah.
I've never walked into a tournament with Crucible Guard, put down my lists, played the tournament and thought, my faction couldn't handle it today. It's always been, oh, well, I made mistakes, whatever it is. It was never, I never ever felt like Crucible Guard was incapable of winning.
Mm-hmm.
And I still feel that way. So I look at this. The only thing I can think of is that the Crucible Guard does feel like the one thing that hurts it quite a bit is the lack of caster options.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you really, it feels like you certainly only have four options in most situations: McKay, Gearheart, Locke, and Sylvestro. And most of the time, it feels like three of those four play so similarly in many, many ways.
Right.
That really, it's almost like you're narrowed down to two casters, in that, you know, you've got Locke and everybody else.
Right.
And Locke gets played a lot simply because she's a very different play style than the rest of the faction.
Yep.
So that certainly feels like that's part of it. Like you're kind of
it does
shoehorned into these two play styles, and you don't really have any other options.
Right, and I think that, you know, one of the things that I think happens faster with Crucible Guard than some other factions is I think that you, because you do have a lot of casters who have some kind of similar play styles, that I think you get some faction burnout a little bit faster than some other factions.
Yeah, I don't know. I haven't felt that, but certainly some other people might have, because you, yeah, I mean, truthfully, you know, my McKay lists and my Sylvestral lists look very, very similar. They play very similar.
Right.
My Gearheart list is different in substantial ways, but truthfully on the table, it feels very, similar. Very similar. Yeah. So yeah, if you don't play Locke, you're playing a lot of samey lists a lot of the time. And I hope that changes eventually. I hope we get another caster or get another unit or whatever it is, or another Jack. And that would be cool, and that would certainly help. But I don't know that I want to completely throw all of that onto the shoulders of 40% and say that's the reason why. But I'm just trying to, you know, guess as to why. Because that honestly, that was probably the stat that surprised me the most was was Crucible Guard that low.
Brandon Owens has been
doing
very well,
yeah,
with Crucible Guard. He's won a lot of events in America. I'm pretty sure he went like 3-3 at the WTC.
Hmm.
So
okay,
I don't know. I almost don't want to say this because I don't know that it's germane to the results, but you know, for whatever reason, it just hasn't felt like I've had as much fun with Crucible Guard as some other factions.
Yeah. Interesting. I actually still enjoy Crucible Guard a lot, and one of the things I enjoy about it is the option to
grant
different choices with each individual model.
Some of it is probably that, like, so, you know, I played Grimkin and then went on a hiatus to play Crucible Guard and then went back to playing Grimkin and played some Infernals.
It does feel like I'll be honest, just watching, I haven't played Grimkin, but watching it on the table, it does feel like Bump is way stronger than anything that Crucible Guard can field at this point. So, I don't know how to really...
There's a lot of, I don't know, there's a lot of details or intricacies or whatever, the things that I just enjoy playing more with Grimkin than I do with Crucible Guard.
Yeah, Grimkin is a bad example
to
compare, because correct. I look at it, I'm like, wow, that seems way better.
It's like, oh.
But then when I look at the rest of the game, I'm like, okay, that's fine.
Yeah. It's like, well, yeah, of course you enjoy driving your Lamborghini. That's that's amazing. So any other final thoughts with the WTC?
I'm just excited, to be honest. The percentages that came out are more balanced.
Yeah, it's actually really great spread.
Yeah, that's very encouraging. You know, obviously there's some, it can still improve. You know, and I think if we were to actually see results where it said 50% across the board, you know, for every single faction, that I'd probably scratch my head and go, well, you know, that's weird. That's really not what we were going for, maybe. But certainly we can do better than having a faction go 39%.
Right.
So I think that those can be brought up a little bit. And certainly whoever's on the top, if it's scoring, that's fine. They can go down. I'm
intrigued to see, once you get more players and you get more results, et cetera, where Infernals are going to shake out with things.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see where that goes to. I definitely think that if you turned around and played this with Streamlr 2020, that you'd get some very drastically different results. I have no clue what 2020 is going to look like. But I think that sometimes each year, some of the results are driven quite a bit by what the packet happens to be that year. Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense. I would just briefly say congrats to all the teams. It seems like it was a great event just overall. And I think we talked about it in the podcast with Norbert. Like, it was really cool to see some of the teams there that are new.
Yeah.
To the scene. So
the next WTC is going to be at Poland, and it is going to be so for the last few years they've had both the Guild Ball and the War Machine WTC happening at the same time, same venue, etc. And next year they're splitting up and happening at different events, etc. And
same times but different venues, or
I'm assuming it's going to be different dates as
different
well.
Dates,
yeah. Okay. Yeah. But I am glad that the WTC is continuing.
Yes.
And I think that it's obviously a valuable part of War Machine and our community. So
Agreed.
So, Josh, do you have a dad joke for us?
I have a little mythology fact for you, Jay.
Oh, I'm so excited.
Do you know what Icarus's least favorite food is?
I do not.
Hot wings. You flew too close to the sun with that joke, Jay.
It took me a while to get that joke because I guess I'm in a Halloween frame of mind, but I thought you said Ichabob.
Oh. No, his would be pumpkin pie or something.
Yeah. So, Trevor, do you have anything for us?
No, I you can start, probably stop asking me at this point. I think Mark's given up on this podcast, so.
Okay.
We miss you, Q Corner.
We'll have something very exciting next week. So on that note, we'd like to thank everyone for listening to another episode of
Chain Attack.